Hmm. BattleNet is a lot shinier than it used to be.
Hey, Abathur, you gotta put mines in every single hiding place? This is Core.
Has the draft become too important? That's the question we're going to ask today, watching the spring tournament finals, listening to some of the pros and the other players talk about it. We've been hearing a lot of talk that the draft is becoming the deciding factor in a lot of matches. I'm John Jagger. Joining me this week, Bo Schwartz. We are sadly without Scott Johnson, but he's happily on vacation, we hope. And this is Core.
Yeah, and not sick. I know he doesn't want to get any stomach bugs.
Yeah, definitely not sick. Just
Hi, John.
Just away.
The cat's away and the mice are out to play.
That's right.
We're here to play. We're mice.
So what do you think, Bo? Has the draft become too important to matches? Or is this just a big emphasis on something that's already been important and now it's getting even more attention than before?
It's an interesting question, because this is like, I think in a lot of games, drafting is real important. Like, I think of Magic the Gathering when I think of drafting and how that's such an art form and that you can win your pod in the Magic the Gathering draft, right in the draft. And like, it's true in Heroes, definitely, that there is part of the game, especially in competitive. But I would say even in my experiences Hero League, I'm affected by this, that there is a huge emphasis on drafts because Heroes counter other heroes, and playstyles counter other playstyles. And I think if your team is thinking about those things and the other team is not, then you're giving yourself an edge to win. I don't think you ever lock anyone out unless the other team like drafts five supports, which it's not going to happen. Is it too important? That's the question. Too important. I think it needs to be important because I think we like it. I think it becomes too important when there are broken picks. And I will say, I played a few Hero League games this week, and it feels sometimes that certain heroes are too important. I'm looking at you, Li Ming, and I'm not looking at your crotch where you don't have any pants in your master skin, but I'm looking in your eyes as a respectful person and saying,
yeah.
I think maybe people like you a little too much and you need to make room for other people. I know that I lost the games I didn't pick Li Ming, and I won the games I picked Li Ming. So that's my own anecdotal evidence for that. Right. What do you think, John? Do you think drafting is just too important? Like, we should be able to pretty much pick whatever we want within reason and have a good shot at winning and not worry about it too much?
To me, I think the dividing line needs to be that point where it's okay. If you're looking at a situation where a team has outdrafted another, and the only way that that team will then lose is if they really do something wrong, if they really throw the game, basically it's their game to lose sort of mentality, I think maybe that's a little too much emphasis on the draft. Because I think ultimately, you know, drafting is a part of the game, but we want to see the gameplay be interesting. You want to see people playing the game well, be a part of the game. And, I mean, granted, you know, you can put the worst players ever on the best drafted team ever, and they're still probably going to lose. But assuming a world where, you know, you've got equal skill going up against equal skill, I think there should always come down to how well they're executing on the mechanics of the game. I don't think there should really ever be a situation where it's just, well, they just outdrafted them, so we're going to go through the motions, but we already know what this is going to be.
So I have an idea for competitive, to up the competitive ante a little bit. And we all know, well, I'm not sure that it's true, but a lot of people, especially in Hearthstone, like to think Blizzard loves their putting RNG into their games. Now I'm looking at Hearthstone.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at the Innkeeper in his eyes. And
respectful.
Yeah, I'm not a douche, a leering perv. And saying like, what if, here's a mind-blowing idea that I literally just thought of. What if when you draft in competitive, you have to pick the role, so assassin, support, warrior, or specialist, and then you roll the hero. So you can't pick the hero, but you can still make a team comp with the roles that you're looking for, and that you roll random heroes.
That's interesting. That's an interesting thought. I would play that game mode.
I think I would too, because I like it's still you can still have a reasonable shot, I think, at coming up with a workable team composition. And yet, you know, when we're looking, it's not always the same 10 heroes or 12 heroes in a draft. And you can still do bands too, so, you know, that would be part of that game. I think drafting's too fun for it to go away completely. I guess that's the answer to the question. Is it too important? I think it's important, and I think people like it. And I think if it goes away, it makes the game. I think just this is the way that, you know, if I look at all the things other MOBAs people are watching and all the other even card games, like drafting is this really fun area where people exercise their skill and ability in a different way, in a more pensive fantasy football kind of way, if you will.
Actually, that was exactly what I was thinking, was it's like the fantasy football aspect of the football game.
Yeah.
That comes later.
Yeah. So, I kind of want this new draft mode I just came up with.
Yeah, I think that sounds like a fun mode. Every time I hear a fun game mode, I'm like, man, I hope something like that gets put into Arena. I'll tell you, I'm at a place where I just want Arena to be this, like, madhouse of crazy rules and crazy modes and crazy things that you can throw together. Keyword here being crazy, because I said it three times. And I just think that sort of stuff would be super fun. You know, maybe not as completely random as a full sexy Picard match, but still have that random element thrown in there.
Something in the middle, or I don't know. Like, I think there's things they could do to spice up the you know, there was even, I saw a tweet today, someone retweeted it, that iDream was like, Lee Ming got picked last, what's wrong with you guys? Like, for this, I guess the European qualifiers are happening now.
Yeah.
So, and I'm just like, that's the attitude of people in this game currently is, you know, Lee Ming is a high priority pick. And that's like, it's cool because it's competitive, and competitive is supposed to be competitive first, fun second, I think, at that level. But I don't know. As viewers, I want to be entertained. So, you know, I want to see a team get a crap character and still wreck with that crap character, if that makes sense.
That's fun. You want to see, like, one of the best moments from that tournament was Artanis getting picked. And you're like, what are they doing? Why are they picking Artanis? And then next thing you know, they win with him. And he did work that game. It wasn't like they won in spite of him. They won on the back of him.
Yeah.
And that was an exciting moment for watching. And I think people like those unexpected moments.
It's like Artanis's John Cena. And when you have a WWE event, you need to have your John Cena in it. Imagine going to a WWE event and there being no John Cena. And you're like, well, I came for John Cena. Like, now I'm not going to watch this if there's no John Cena. Like, I think people have their favorite heroes and they don't show up in these broadcasts. People are like, all right, you know, that's not fun.
Oh, I was looking at it from the point of win rate. I was going to say, I don't think you can call Artanis John Cena with how often he's...
They're both good guys, right? Has John Cena ever gone heel? I don't think so.
No. Never.
Yeah. I don't really watch wrestling, but I do know that about wrestling right now is that John Cena is the perennial good guy.
He's always a good guy. I think he started as a bad guy. But you know who walks a fine line between good and bad, Bo?
No, I don't. Please enlighten me.
Zool, the necromancer. He's all about balance. The balance of life and death.
I really like the Zool like character design because he looks like a hobo, and he doesn't look like his priority is balancing life and death. He looks like, you know, I want to play with some dead corpses.
Finding food later that evening.
Right. Like, he needs to eat a hamburger, and he just looks like he hasn't slept in months, and he likes to play with dead corpses. And so if I knew someone like that and they were like, no, I like to keep the balance, I'd be like, bull beep. Like, I don't buy any of that. But he's a cool character. Real exciting character, actually, because good Lord, as a Diablo player and browsing Diablo forums, I've heard endlessly how people want Necromancer in Diablo 3. So it feels like, you know, fan service on the part of Blizzard to be like, here you go. Here is the Necromancer. We wanted it, you wanted it, and we're making it happen here. And I think his art and his VO are, like, fantastic. Like, he looks great, and he feels great.
And you actually picked him up for cash this time, right?
I did. Thanks to Overwatch, I didn't have any gold in my account because, you know, when you're playing free-to-play, you got to keep that gold economy going. And I just didn't. I was 10,000. Like, it's just not going to happen. So I said, all right, I'm going to pony up some cash. This game is worth spending cash for, and Zool seems pretty exciting. So,
let's get to the nitty-gritty question right off the bat. Do you feel like that gold was well spent? Or that cash?
That cash
was well spent.
I think it was, because I like having all the heroes. So even if a hero's crappy, I'm still going to be like okay with buying it, I think. I will say this. I've only had two games where I've had fun with them, and the other games were not that fun.
Personally. Oh, really?
And they were the games where I played with you guys, with Scott and our crew, or our Hero Pants team. And I don't want to segue into a giant conversation about matchmaking yet again, because as important as it is, it's also kind of a boring topic. Every match I played solo and I went to try them out on the first 2 days of release, it was, you know, me, the tank, Azul, and a bunch of ranged assassins. And it just sucked. It sucked hard. Like, there was another Azul on the team. We'd both shoot our poison novas at the same time. Like, I was killing, but I was also dying. It just wasn't, I felt like I wasn't getting the game experience I wanted with Zool. And when I played two games with you guys, then we had a tank, we had a healer, and it felt a lot better.
We also won.
We won both games.
That also always feels good.
Yeah. But this is part of it also, too, is that I'm relatively new to Li Ming as well. So I have two new heroes to choose from. So, you know, we swapped at one point. You started playing Zool, and I started playing Li Ming, and I was just as happy playing a new hero on Li Ming as I was on Zool. And Li Ming is awesome. So, you know. How did you like playing Zool?
I really like him. He's a very different feeling hero. The one thing that I noticed almost immediately is that I want to play him more aggressively than you should play Zool. And that's probably because I play a lot of warriors. When I do play assassins, I tend to play either, you know, very ranged like Li Ming, or I play somebody who's a little bit tankier like Thrall, who can actually take a couple hits and have a lot of self-sustain getting into those fights. And so marching in with Zool, you know, with little abandon, I just go marching in there, and next thing I know, I'm dead. And he was a hero that took a little for me to get used to, because I kept being surprised by my deaths. And that's something that you run into in this game from time to time is, you know, a lot of times when you die, you know it's coming. You know the mistake you made. You realize that you overextended. You realize you stayed in longer than you should. You know, whatever the reason might be. But with Zool, I thought I was doing okay, and then next thing I know, I'm just gone. And so it took me a little bit to adapt to just how squishy he is, because he is actually a bit on the squishy side.
It's because he's a melee character. Like, I think all new melee characters except Johanna like suffer from this, where it's just like you forget you can get blown up easy, and you don't, unless you're an assassin, you don't do as much damage as you think you do in a short period of time, which is like, because I charge in there and feel like, oh, I'm going to kill everybody and not. But when I showed up at the right time, like an ambusher to bone prison and to do all my things, it worked. Like, I didn't die and it worked much better. But he's melee, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you can't dance around the back line. You know, you're just like, well, I need to be up where it's relevant somewhere. And if you stand a greater risk of sort of getting blown up.
Now, he works when he's doing damage. Let's make no bones about it. Zool puts out some serious damage. And not only that, but he can nullify some serious damage when going up against the right comp. You know, you put him toe-to-toe with an auto-attack hero like a Vala or Rainer, and he will just walk in and just eat them for breakfast. It's really sad when they try to fight back against the Zool. But he is very susceptible to mages, is what happens. And so that's the thing that I quickly learned you need to be very careful with on team fights with Zool, is that, yeah, you're going to get in there and you're going to ruin those auto attackers' day, but you get caught in too many blizzards from Jaina or, you know, Li Ming's magic, stuff like that, and you're going to just get wiped off the face of the earth in response.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been my experience, too. And it's too bad. One of the things that, again, because he seems like he's built to be a lane pusher, right? Yeah. So, but I've been building him team fighty, because that's just what, you know, you need to do that. Like, and his passive does nothing in a team fight, from what I can tell. Like, it does absolutely nothing.
If they're fighting in a lane, it can do some work, but it's, you know, it depends on the map. You know, in Tomb of the Spider Queen, odds are pretty good you're going to be fighting in lane. It's either that or the turn-in, which isn't too far from the lane. So the skeletons, you know, may or may not be a bigger impact there. But you look at a map like Infernal Shrines and... Or the other one. What's the other one?
The Battlefield of Eternity.
Yeah, where a lot of that team fighting happens outside of the lane. You're fighting in the middle, there's no minions around. Yeah, his skeletal trait at that point is basically useless as soon as he steps out of the lane as far as team fights go, with the only exception being if you take the talent that spawns two skeletons when he puts the cage around them.
Right. Right. Yeah, but those are even... Are they skeletal warriors? are they skeletal warriors? I'm just going to keep up this RP for me. This is Gorath RP. Yeah. I say skeletal. I'm just going to say skeletal from now on.
It'll be skeletal till the end of time.
It is a skeletal warrior. Or no, that's Rathma's Blessing. I'm looking at a different one. Yeah, it's... I guess what a question I'm asking with him, though, is that, like... You know how with Asmodan, like, you do join in the team fights, but really you end up doing a lot of pressure in the lanes? I'm always conflicted about him, at least for now, whether I should be, like, first tribute comes up. Well, I'm going to stay in the lane and push it with these sweet skeletons like Asmodan might, because if they leave that lane unattended, well, you might even take the fort. And it seems like you can build them maybe too late in the talent tree, but you can, you know, you can make them explode on death. You can make them raise 6 and have their damage increased by 100. Like, you can make them really good towards the end, but I haven't experimented that way because I keep building them with, like, you know, the vault make. Like, I like Bone Spear. I wish he yelled Bone Spear when he sort of threw it, but I like Bone Spear. And there's one that makes the guy vulnerable when you prison him. And there's another one that does 2% of maximum health when you're using the giant. What's the W? Curse Strikes.
Yeah.
So, like, I've been taking all the teamfight talents because I feel like I need to be in teamfights in the second half of the game. And you know, the lane pushing really starts to lose value later on when you're all grouped up. So, I don't know. Have you tried lane pushing Zul?
I have mostly resigned to, you know, that I'm going to be mostly teamfighting with him. Again, it's a little trickier right now because comps are very weird. So, you can get in and very much say, like, oh, yeah, I'm going to lane push. And then, oh, we have no warriors, and two of them are stealthies, and okay, I guess team fights are gonna probably be where I'm at. But it's a weird place. But I have tried his skeleton build, and I have had a lot of success with it because I feel like if you can get your team to at least support it, those skeletons can do some serious damage. So if you can get your team to support you in, you know, bringing the fights to lanes, to buying you time to push the lane by yourself, because he's actually very good one-on-one. I haven't attempted to go 1v1 with a Zagara, but I would say he can give Zagara a run for her money as far as lane pushing presence. He's right up there. So if you send him to clear a wave, he can do it in seconds, and then he's sending a stronger wave against your enemy in response. So he's exceptionally good at that. But mostly I've noticed, well, when we played, we got a lot of Cho'Gall matches for some reason, which I was okay with because he can destroy Cho'Gall. Don't mess with the Necromancer if you're Cho'Gall. That's my advice to you. He does a lot of percentage-based damage, and I had so much fun in those matches where we had to go up against the Cho'Gall, because I would just run in, I would pick all the talents that pertain to doing percentage-based damage, and you've never seen a braver Necromancer. I'd just go running right up to Cho'Gall and just, like, this is Christmas, and start hitting him, and next thing you know, he's running out of there as fast as he can. And we got, what was it, that one game, like 16 Cho'Gall takedowns or something like that.
Yeah, we had 40 to 16 kills or something like that on that match. So I guess I have a few questions about talents for you.
Okay.
What you like for picks. I assume when you're doing the Cho'Gall matches, you're taking Backlash. That's the one that does 15% health damage when the bone armor explodes.
Yes.
But I've mostly been taking Shade, actually. I think that's a really strong one. You can evade all basic attacks. I think that's really good against auto attack dudes. What have you been taking for like level one mostly?
I've been mostly taking the enhanced damage, mostly because it took me a while to figure out what the advantage of Shade was. Like, that talent feels really weird to me because it lasts the same duration as your shield, and then your shield expires. It's not like you retain it or anything like that. And so it took me a while to figure out, oh, okay, you use this to help mitigate multiple types of damage at the same time. Because yeah. I was thinking like, all right, well, if I'm just dodging attacks, what do I even need the shield for?
Ability damage.
So, basically. Yeah, and that's ultimately what it came down to. And so I would be more inclined to take that now. I do like the extra damage. It's very hard for me to ignore damage talents from time to time. But yeah, I think both of those are solid picks.
I think the other one is called Shackler. When your bone armor is active, you slow nearby enemies for 30% for 1 second. I assume that repeats if they stay, like it procs every second. Because I think the bone, what is it called? Bone, it's not on the tooltips here.
Bone prison?
Bone armor. Like your bone armor lasts 3 seconds, yeah. I think, right? So, but I took Shackler once and I hated it. Just because if you're trying to use that thing to slow people further, like you just get blown up, like you're saying. He is kind of squishy, so if you're just trying to be a slow bot, hasn't been working out that great, I find.
Yeah, and I tried building him. So he has a tier 16 talent, Executioner, and there's a lot of heroes that have Executioner. It's been slowly being kind of weeded out of heroes as more interesting talents come out. And I remember a time way back when where Executioner was a pretty viable pick. And so when I was playing with him, I was like, oh, maybe I'll go with an attempt to, you know, do an Executioner type build, you know, apply as much slow as possible to have almost 100% uptime on Executioner, which causes my basic attacks to deal 40% more damage against slow, rooted, or stunned targets, is basically what it does. But that talent has since been kind of nerfed, and every time I took that build, I didn't notice a huge performance increase. Basically, the only effect it had is my damage numbers looked more impressive, because they get a cool little crit border around them. And that's about the only thing it was doing for me. And I feel like Shackler is there and designed to basically enhance this Executioner build that I don't think is very good.
Yeah, because there's not a lot of other stuff. I think those are the two talents you pointed out, and I can't think of anything else that really. I mean, other abilities work with it, but they like, you know, increase it even further. It's a long gap between those two.
Yeah, I mean, the Frost Mages will help with it. You can do a thing that makes your scythe slow the target as well. There's ways to make sure that your opponents are slowed a lot, but it's not ultimately going to do you a ton of good. I mean, even with 100% uptime, if you assume that, it's still not a huge enough increase based on what you're giving up by not picking the other talents.
Yeah. Okay. And I want to talk about one other talent real quick because I want your take on it.
Okay.
Is the weakened talent. I've been taking this pretty much exclusively at level 7. And it's the one that makes the attack speed slow of Cursed Strike 75%. A 75% slow. Like that is nuts. That's real bad, right? And it's because the Cursed Strikes has a pretty big, like you can hit a lot of people with it. And if you miss, you have like multiple chances to slow people. Like, it's crazy. I think it's crazy.
Yeah, I think you can get off like 4 or 5 curse strikes before it expires, which is huge. And that is a big slow. I tend to not take it. I tend to take Rathma's Blessing because I like the self-heal that comes with it. But if you were going up against a auto attack heavy comp, I can see that talent absolutely just decimating the other team. I mean, you're gonna kill their willpower. I mean, can you imagine as a Rainer or something and you have 75% delay between your shots? Like, that's gonna feel awful.
It's like the opposite of stim packing. It's like I don't know what's a depressive, it's like heroin packing or something. Or,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's it.
What do they give you? What do they give you in the hospital? Morphine. It's a morphine pack.
Yeah, it's a morphine pack. You just get real slow and groggy, and then he can have an operation on you, and you'll be fine.
And you know he likes to play with bodies, so
he does.
This is a perfect storm of calamity here.
So, final verdict of your initial impression of Zul. What are your thoughts? You think he's going to get nerfed? Because I'm expecting nerfs.
I need to play him more to really find his power. I feel like I haven't found the center of his power. So it's hard to say that he's going to get nerfed. I think he might. But it's hard to say. Like, it's just weird. Definitely everything he does is powerful. So if nerfs are coming, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, I think, but I don't see why, I guess, at this point. I just see a lot of damage.
One of the ones that you're hearing a lot of people say, like, this is bad. This is more on the pro side that you're hearing this complaint than, you know, just the regular players. But Mortal Wound, his level 20 talent, is simply unholy. When you think about it. So basically what Mortal Wound does is his Spectral Scythe ability, anybody who gets hit by it receives 75% less healing for 4 seconds.
That's amazing.
When you take into account that Spectral Scythe has an 8-second cooldown, that means that in theory, you are giving healers a 4-second window to pull off any good heals in that game to important targets. And that's it.
But can you imagine that clutch ancestral?
I know.
Being 75% less effective? Like, it's. I think it still takes some skill to time that, though, because it's not easy to hit with Spectral Scythe. You got to be close. It doesn't have a giant range.
Yeah.
And there's a wind up. Like, you don't just shoot it. Like, it's not like Li Ming's abilities that fire off. Pretty much, they have a slow travel time, but they execute immediately. There's a little wind up animation with the scythe, so. That's harder to pull off.
It's a little tough to pull off for sure. But potentially hitting an entire team with it.
That's not his only healing reduction talent, is it? Doesn't he have another one?
I think that's the only one that actually reduces healing.
Okay. It's interesting.
Everything else reduces attack speed is the other big thing that he reduces. And I guess movement speed. He's kind of big on debuffing heroes, which is kind of
He's a big
cool.
CC guy, actually. When you look at all the different ways he can talent his abilities, you can really spec him into heavy CC. I don't know. He's fun. Like, I am looking forward to playing with him more. I think everything about him is cool. I'm just like, I haven't reached that place where, you know, when I swap back and forth between Li Ming and get a billion kills with Li Ming and then play Zul, I feel like Zul is like, not as, you know, fun. Not as badass, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It needs a team. When I played with you guys, we did great because we're all working together. But solo queue styles, you might find it's a rough life in Quick Match.
Yeah, and we might talk a little bit more about that later when we get to some of our questions that we've had. But one thing that's going to keep Zul a little busier is that there's a new matchmaking rule. And it's basically going to leave the potential open for one more slot of a different type because Blizzard has said no more 3 warriors per matchmaking. In the past, when they're, you know, when you queue into Quick Match and you get assigned a team, there has been no restriction saying that you couldn't have a team of 3 warriors and then, you know, 2 whatever else. They said that they ran the numbers. They found that it actually enhanced matches without a significant increase in wait time in the queue. So they have decided that now, if you queue up, your team will be limited to 2 warriors max. Now, of course, you can cheat this by having a party of 3 warriors going in. But as far as picking people from the ether, it is not going to ever assign you 3 warriors to your team.
So you can end up with zero warriors on your team, 1 warrior on your team, or 2 warriors on your team.
Yep.
And those are your 3 options. Unless, you know, you get paired with a 4-stack that has 3 warriors. You know, if you're a solo queue player and you log in and you're with a 4-stack on your team and they have 3 warriors, then, well, that can still happen.
Yeah. But they're not going to... Which is good. I mean, you don't want Blizzard to come into your, you know, hey, we're all just going to have a party. We're going to have fun. Let's group up. And then all of a sudden, you know, a whistle blows when you select 3 warriors and says, no, you can't do that. So it's smart that obviously they're limiting it to just who it's picking for you. But I think this is a good change. I have occasionally been on the receiving end of the three warrior random select, and it doesn't feel good. Even when you win, there's a pace and a feel to games where you're going up against three warriors that just isn't as much fun as games that don't have that. So I'm kind of all for this change. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think there are I think we all have expectations when we go into solo queue specifically. Like, sometimes, you know, I go into solo queue, I have time for a half an hour game, and then I get the weirdest game, and it's just not what I wanted. Like, it's the thing that you agree to. It's your contract, your social contract. You go into quick match that you're rolling the dice. But sometimes you're just like, I didn't want to play this game. I didn't want to play Novas on both teams, Air Tools on both teams. You can see there's a recurring theme about what gets my goat in quick match. Like, right. Every show, I'm always bringing it up. But like, when I go into quick match, I'm like, I want the variety. And so when there's a lack of variety in this kind of thing, then it's like, ugh, I didn't want to play this not toxic, but just weird Cold War game. And the same is true of Warriors. Like, those games are definitely, if you're playing against it or on it, they don't feel like a proper Heroes game, I guess. And I'm all for doing weird things, but it's like weird things with your friends or with people who are going in. But also the contract of, I want weird things. Sometimes you don't want to play Hero League, but you want a relatively normal game of Heroes so you can practice your Zul play, for example. That's why I played Quick Match, except none of my matches were normal.
Right, because right after a hero releases, that whole thing falls into complete chaos.
Sure. And like, we kind of know, we have privileged information, not privileged, that's the wrong word. We're not insiders. We're knowledgeable because we do a show about it every week and we keep up to date. The average player just plays the game, I think. I think a lot of people are just like, hey, here's a fun game, I'm going to log in and play. And then have a really terrible experience when they play their quick match games because there's not a way it's meant to be played, but there kind of is a way it's meant to be played. So when you know that's the case, it's like a little easier to take. But when you don't know it's the case, you're just like, this game just seems unbalanced and dumb.
Yeah, and what happened with this particular match?
Right. And so, you know, I'd say, like, definitely this is a good change. Like, on the whole, I don't think we need, like, it's cute. If you want to play we've played 10 Warrior games in custom match. Like, that's there. And Arena's coming. Like, that kind of stuff will be there for you to do. But I think quick match is, even though it's random, it should emulate a normal game of Heroes as much as possible. So I'm all for rules that do this, and I think this does it.
Yeah, and speaking of rules, Blizzard is thinking about instituting a new one. This one actually pertaining to Hero League. Dustin Browder recently tweeted that they are considering making it a requirement to have a hero at least to level 5 for their own personal hero level before you can bring them into Hero League. The reason for this being, people complain quite a bit when a new hero comes out and you've got a bunch of people in Hero League drafting that hero who have no idea how to build or play the character, and that it makes for a very unwelcome, unfun atmosphere for the first week or so that a hero's out. And with a 3-week hero release cycle, you know, that's pretty frequent that you run into these issues.
Yeah.
You play more Hero League than me, for sure. Have you seen this? Do you experience this? Or do you kind of avoid Hero League right after a new hero comes out?
No, I mean, if I want to play, I play. Actually, I was this. I think I played a level 2 solo hero. I have some thoughts. This might get ranty. I don't know if you want to jump in with your thoughts first, in case I go off the rails.
No, you go off the rails, man.
All right. So this is basically a bad idea, I think. And the reason I say it is this. First of all, level 5 is like 3 games, maybe 4. If it's stim back, it's definitely like 3 games. Why even give yourself the make work project of doing it? If you're going to institute a cap, it should be like level 9 or level 10. Mostly, I only play my characters that are level 10 and above, mostly. And I would say almost exclusively my level 9 characters are above because I only have 2 characters below that, and that's Cho and Gaul, and the new characters, which I haven't gotten to 9 or 10 yet. But here's the thing is when you put gates on it, let's say it is 9 or 10. Let's say, you know, after careful consideration, a good amount of games and quick match is 20 before even veteran players can bring the new heroes into Hero League. Well, quick match games kind of suck compared to Hero League games. So if you're someone who plays Hero League, now you're forced to play a game mode that you don't want to. Like, and yes, you're practicing the hero, but you're not practicing it in the environment it's going to be relevant anyways. And it's as a player, now you've got to invest 30 minutes a match. You've got to invest X amount of hours before you can bring a hero into Hero League. No, I think the system is good the way it is. And I would say, if anything, if they want to do that, there should be a delay on his availability in Hero League. So Zul gets released, you can play him for quick match for a week, then bring him into ranked or something along those lines. Even then, I still think that's bad. But the issue here is that, like, the contract in Hero League is that everyone's trying to win. So when dum-dums, you know, decide... I guess dum dum's kind of pejorative. I'm sorry.
but careful. Don't go too harsh now. Dum-dum's pretty severe.
Because I was that, and note that I was that self same dum dum who did it. And we lost the game I played Zulin, incidentally. When someone comes in and is like, oh, I'm actually not going to uphold this contract of trying my best and playing my best heroes, but I'm just going to play whatever, like that's prevalent through all the ranks. Like everyone's going to be new to a character or new to its experience at Hero League at some point, no matter how much studying they do. There's still going to be a newness and there's still going to be that issue. So I feel like they're just making extra walls for what is no reason. What are effectively people just complaining about their Hero League experience. And I think the focus should be on improving the Hero League experience and not setting up gates. Like, I think that's really small thinking to be like, let's put up gates for new heroes to keep the bads from playing them and ruining. Like, probably if they really are bad, then they're going to ruin your game with any hero they pick. And B, like, there are some issues with the way matchmaking works in terms of, you know, people, it's very volatile. People have all kinds of skill ranges or in all kinds of weird spots on the ladder, and like there's a large cluster of people even at rank one. So it's like, I think we're focusing on the wrong issues by making changes here. That's my opinion. I think I'm done.
I would actually, so first of all, I think your idea better of limiting when he becomes available in quick match. Again, the duration of time that could be debated. I like that better than a, you know, like you said, a 3-game limit before you can bring him in, because whoop-de-doo, level 5. I got that my first day with him, and I only played 2 actual quick match games with him. The rest were me practicing in AI matches. I think it was 4 games total between the two of those to get to level 5. It's not a big deal. It's not particularly hard. And so I see that as good, and I definitely understand why people are complaining, because I do think there is that contract there that, hey, we're in Hero League, we're here to win, and then bringing in a character that you're not familiar with might be doing you good as a player, but it definitely goes against that contract and that concept. Now, here's what I think. This is a little bit of a different solution to it. I also think they shouldn't waste their time with this, because I think they are going to solve the problem themselves as soon as they put in a way to do draft unranked, or whatever they want to call it, whatever mode that is essentially quick match with the draft element complete, because I think that then gives players an ability to get in a less severe and critical level.
Yeah.
And get to play in a comp and style that more mirrors what actual Hero League would be.
And bans. Also just tossing that in there too.
Yeah.
Right? Like, bans would also be like, oh, this new hero's overpowered. Or everyone sucks with them. Just ban them out.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think we know Blizzard's working on both of those features. Bans probably coming considerably before any other form of unranked draft, but I think both of those will help solve this problem more so even than, you know, any sort of weird restriction would.
Because the restriction, also the way it's worded here, would last, like, if you were new to Zul 2 years later in the game cycle, you'd still have to pass all those heaps. Like, you're going to be new to him sometime, you know, like, that's on players to be responsible for their, you know, what they bring to their Hero League matches. And if they're not that talented because you're not that high of a Hero League rank, then, you know, chill out. Like, it's just the way it goes. Like, I just don't see a way around that. Just get higher ranks. Yeah. Like, I know a lot of people are like, but I can't get higher ranks as matchmaker. But I'm like, that's how you get out. You get farther and farther away from people being not that great with new heroes and experimenting the higher up you go. So no one was crying when Li Ming came out. I don't think. No one was like, man, everyone's so bad with Li Ming. She doesn't do any damage. That didn't happen, right?
Li Ming's a freaking powerhouse. I actually think Zul's a freaking powerhouse too, but I think it's easier to play him poorly than it is to play Li Ming poorly. Especially because Li Ming launched with a talent that basically helped her out in such a big way where people who weren't good with her could actually still get pretty good results. Yeah, that's right. I took a shot at everybody who took that Johan talent or whatever it is. Guess what? Your crutch is gone. How's that feel?
Nice. I hate crutches.
Yeah, me too. Yeah,
you gotta stay away from things that are crutches.
I never took that talent. Speaking of Li Ming, though, you found something super interesting about Li Ming that I want you to go ahead and talk about. This came from Reddit, right?
Yeah, so Redditor Malignifier posted a Li Ming one-shot list. So in case you were just sort of curious, who could be one-shotted with a full, not a full rotation, actually. The rotation is 5 connecting magic missiles, so you need Mirror Ball talent at 13. I think that's where it is. And the maximum range arcane orb, an untalented maximum range arcane orb, incidentally, followed by 1 auto attack to get value from the charge blast talent. There's no disintegrate in this rotation. Basically, it does 3,655 damage. I believe that's at level 20. It wasn't clear based on the post, but apart from the talents mentioned, it assumes it's done mathematically. This wasn't actually tested in game, but it's done mathematically to say, like, how much health does this person have versus how much damage do they have? And so mathematically, the character is one-shottable. Now, in your game, you might find it works a little different with talents and people juking and things like that. But this will give you a sense of who your best options are if you land your full rotation. So without further ado, why don't you read the list of one-shottable characters, John?
All right, so these are the characters on the kill list. Now, again, very important to note, this assumes everything hits, which if you've played Li Ming is not easy to do. Abathur, Brightwing, Falstad, Illidan, Jaina, Kael'thas, Lili, Lieutenant Morales, Murky, Nazebo, Nova, Raynor, Rexxar, Sergeant Hammer, Sylvanas, Tassadar, the Lost Vikings. I assume that's probably each one of them could get blown up by it because you're not going to hit all three of them with every ability. Tychus, Taranda, Vala, Zagara, Zeratul.
There's your kill list. Happy hunting, folks.
Now, of these, the one that seems the tastiest to me, if you want to know my personal opinion, is Sergeant Hammer.
Because
Sergeant Hammer isn't moving.
Nope.
So not only do you have to hit the full rotation, which is not as hard against the Sergeant Hammer, Sergeant Hammer's really not going anywhere until things get dire, but this is so bursty. Just fall on that hammer, do that business, and then look for the next person on the kill list because your cooldowns have reset across the board.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's like a free kill. Man, she's overpowered. it's I've been playing as her. It's ridiculous.
She's so fun.
Now I want to tell people, and now it seems kind of obvious, but in case you're someone who's playing Li Ming and just isn't getting it, the rotation, this kill rotation, it's very simple, but the timing's important. You got a W for, you got an arcane orb first. You got to hit W first. You aim it at a person and then you magic missile, because the magic missile will start behind, but then it will catch up to a point where the orb and the missiles hit at the same time. That's like the key to this whole giant burst. It's hard to do, but that's kind of how you got to try and do it, is point your arrows at a point along the trajectory of the orb at its max range on the person you're aiming. It seems a little obvious, but it took me, you know, a couple games to really get a sort of muscle memory feel for it, as opposed to, like, I get it in my head. So if you connect that way, oh my God, it's nuts. It takes somebody down to like 20% health. Like any character will just shrivel.
Can I tell you, I have never taken the mirror ball talent and everybody loves it. I've never taken
it. Oh, I'm interested in hearing it because like I don't have a firm like I don't have a firm Li Ming like mindset. I find I'm like really in heavy experimentation mode. What do you take at 16?
Let me pull up her talents real quick. So I am a personal big fan of teleport
Li Ming.
So I take Diamond Skin at that talent.
See, I like the teleport Li Ming, but I'm like, shields for sissies.
Look, shields might be for sissies, sir, as you say, but when you are teleporting as a ranged character on top of the deadliest characters in the Nexus, nobody will accuse you of having a lack of bravado and bravery. So,
dude, I'm joking. Shields are so OP in this game. Like, I always pick shields on Kael'thas. Like, it's kind of a joke. I'm just, you know, experimenting with her because I'm like, it's probably the better pick, especially staying alive longer means you do more damage. It's actually a DPS talent.
It has gotten nerfed a little bit, though. And it was weird. I also actually used to take... So Illusionist got buffed. I haven't played Li Ming in a little while, so I would actually change my talents a little bit. But Illusionist got a... I don't remember if it was a buff or actually they just fixed it, like it wasn't working the way it was supposed to. But I used to take Glass Cannon, and a lot of people would say, oh, but when you take Glass Cannon and then you take Diamond Skin, you're effectively...
You're nerfing Diamond Skin, basically.
Yeah, right? and so my response was always, yeah, but I'm nerfing the damage, which is important, or enhancing the damage, but I'm nerfing the Diamond Skin, which isn't as important. The only thing Diamond Skin needs to do is briefly keep me alive until I can reposition, reset, and, you know, move into the next attack. Like, I very rarely have somebody burn through my entire Diamond Skin shield anyway, so... I was actually taking both of those for a while, but I don't know if I would still do that. But she's a fun character. Everybody should go try both of the heroes we talked about in depth today, Li Ming and Zul, because they are absolutely just a blast.
I want to say that like all that noise out there about them releasing poopy heroes recently or unexciting heroes, I guess I'm just picking bad words today to describe things. I feel bad. But like, you know, Lunar and Greymane and Cho'Gall, everyone's like, you know, heroes is the thing. And then bam, we get Li Ming and bam, we got Zul. But like Greymane and Lunar are also awesome. Like I'd want to, you know, position it this way to say they've been releasing awesome heroes this whole time. Even from Artanis was the one before Cho'Gall, and Artanis is an amazing hero. He doesn't get enough love. Like I think he needs some fixes, but he's fantastic. Hero, like they're just killing it right now, and so yeah. But play Zul and Li Ming because they are well. Li Ming in particular, she's just her damage is nuts. Like do you think it's actually kind of? I think it's kind of bad. Like I think like bad isn't broken. I suppose like I think it's way too high. Compared to like
yeah, probably. I think I don't know. It's hard. The only issue I have with Li Ming is she has. Taken away a lot of the focus of Sylvanas and a lot of the strength of Sylvanas because she's
gonna be an assassin and a sieger, right?
Yeah, using her as a siege is super effective because she can outrange the turret. So Sylvanas's trait is, you know, she nullifies the turrets firing back, which is super cool and useful, but you know, you can do some early Li Ming cheese by not even going within the range of the turrets, which is a whole other deal.
And if anything, like on a flavor standpoint, I think archer characters should have like better range abilities than wizard characters. Because one of Li Ming's features too is that she can be so far away and yet connect with all of her powerful abilities. Yeah. And like Sylvanas has to like walk right up to the thing and pellet it with arrow. Like Sylvanas should be able to hit you when you're standing in your Hall of Storms. Like that wailing arrow should actually just travel the entire length of the map. Like she's an archer. They're good at shooting things far away. Just look at Legolas, man. Yeah. The hobbits are headed to Isengard, right? Yeah, you can see that all the way from wherever he was standing. So, you know, archers, like, they can shoot far. Wizards are powerful, but they can't shoot far. That's my opinion.
All right, well, one more thing on that note before we move into core concepts. It's not in the notes, but I meant to probably put it in here. Blizzard really wants you to take the Snipe Master talent bow.
They do. It's like the third patch now.
They are basically pleading with you, begging you patch, to take that talent.
That one patch was literally, because I saw it, you're talking about the balance patch that also hit like this week or last week sometime, right? Yeah, it was like, it was the third time, and it's like, we have a balance patch. The damage of Snipe Master or whatever has gone up, and we nerfed Rhaegar. That's been like the same patch notes for 3 weeks. It's hilarious.
How
actually I want to try it though. I actually now especially that you brought it up, because I don't pick it. It's look, abilities like Gathering Power, you take them because they're fun, but inherently they're bad. Why are they bad? Well, because it's this little turn of phrase called win more, which is like, you'll have this in Hearthstone where it's like the card's really good. But it's only good if you're winning. If you're losing, it does nothing to pull you out of the hole you're in. Or it doesn't provide value regardless of whether you're ahead or behind. So gathering power in heroes is basically like, if you get kills, increase your damage. But if you're losing, or you get, even if you're winning, but you just get killed all the time and you have 0% bonus, it's like you just didn't, it's like the talent says, skip this talent tier because you're too good for talents. And that's not a smart choice. That's not a smart thing to do. At all. It's like we're trying to win the lottery to plan for your retirement, right?
Yeah.
Like, I think I'm gonna win the lottery, so that's my retirement plan. Probably not gonna have, statistically speaking, not likely.
Here's what we do. Yeah. Here's what I'm proposing. You ready for this?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll play Zul.
Uh huh.
You play Nova.
Uh huh.
Every time I bone prison somebody, you snipe them.
All right. I like this plan.
You know exactly where they're going to be. It's going to be a long route. Get some stacks going on that. The talent's been buffed so much, it's got to be overpowered at this point.
So they did some good stuff with it, actually. It's worth mentioning. It used to be, I think, it stacked 10 times max. Now it stacks 5 times, and the increase per stack is way bigger. So that's good.
Yeah.
So hitting 5 snipes in a row, not that hard. But here's the thing. I'm going to just one more little thing about it,
okay,
which is that like Snipe is not, I think people may play this way and maybe it's good, but I never open with Snipe because it's such a high risk, high reward. I always open with an auto and pinning shot and then a hollow decoy and an auto because I'm building one in the chamber style. Snipe is like hopefully the last thing I'm doing. Which means they're running away most of the time. So if I have the bone jail or the bone prison, bone jail is what Scott calls it. I think there might be like a Freudian thing going on there, but we'll ask him about it next week. Is that, you know, I'll hit that, but if he doesn't get bone jailed or if it's Nubarak and he's got a freaking beetle in the way, then I just lose it all. So I don't know.
Yeah.
I think I don't like it.
What if they made it to where Snipe would penetrate minions?
I think you can talent that way.
I haven't looked at her talents in so long.
We can do this live to hard drive, dude.
Yeah.
Let's see.
I don't think that's what it means when you look up talents while you're recording.
Okay. At level 13, Snipe also deals 50% damage to enemies near the impact with explosive round. So I think what that means is that anything hit also with the AOE maybe counts as a connected hit. So that might be okay. But Snipe Master, it has to be a hero.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't know if it
counts. What if it just passively went through minions? Do you think that would make Snipe Master more appealing if you knew you could aim through a line of minions and still hit a hero?
I mean, I'd say, yeah, it'd make her better. So, yes, but like it seems kind of OP. Like it seems like part of the trade-off is that you have to aim the snipe skillfully. So what it does is remove that drawback to it.
Puts too much training wheels on the talent.
Yeah, and if they did, I think there was a talent called Railgun at one point that is no longer in the game now. That actually it penetrated the first target hit.
That sounds right. That sounds like something I've heard.
Yeah. So It's just like Snipe Master's up against anti-armor shells and one in the chamber, which is like one in the chamber after using an ability, your next basic attack deals 80% additional damage. Like that just seems way better than anything Snipe Master can offer, which is roll the dice. And if you hit, great. And if you don't, lose all the damage. Like auto attack, basic attacks are so much more reliable in that they hit. And anti-armor is like great for if you want to go burst. It's, you know what? I'm going to try it. This will be my homework for next week's show.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll report back next week. We'll do our little jail, bone jail because test.
Someone at Blizzard really wants me. This is all about me, right?
Yeah.
It's all about me. This is all for me. They really want me to play Nova and report back on this talent. So I'm going to do it.
All right. We'll see.
Challenge accepted.
Now it's time for this. Core concepts, or as it is this week, core concept. We're going to be talking about one specifically. And that's something that has become super prevalent and super important lately, but it's always been important. And that is the importance of rotations. If you've been watching the tournaments lately, you are probably getting sick of hearing the commentators say rotation, 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 because it is a critical part of the game. Bo, I'm going to let you go ahead and take the initial part of this, letting people know what are rotations, why are they so important?
Well, you know, you probably have lane assignments in the beginning of the game where you figure out who's going where. But the game, you know, Murphy's Law applies and all well-laid plans, et cetera, go to crap. So you find that people have to travel to other lanes to accomplish goals or to commit to strategies that you might decide defending or pushing the lane or getting a gank. So rotation is basically your ability to respond to situations by asking the question, should I be staying in my lane or should I go and provide assistance to the other lane? And the reason this is an important skill is because actually I don't know what the pro teams do, how they call out rotations on TeamSpeak, but I imagine at some level this has to be, and the word I was looking for last week about Cho'Gall players who play really well together, there has to be some simpatico. Like, there has to be some ability to be able to make these decisions without consulting with your entire team all the time. And especially in solo queue games, to make these calls on your own. You have to have that ability or work on it. And that is what a rotation is. A rotation saying, okay, I'm in my lane. The lane's pushed in. I could stay and wait for the extra XP wave, but it looks like my teammate in the mid lane is getting hammered by three guys. And I don't know where the rest of my team, they're not nearby. I can get there and provide support. I'm going to leave my lane and rotate mid and help with the defense or help secure a gank when someone gets pinged. Like, that's effectively rotating. And when you're in a group of five, then you start rotating in that sort of way where, like, your team is moving. I don't know if does it count that way, John. What do you think? Like, when you're in a team of five, does that count as rotation, or are we sort of done with that conversation at that point?
I would say that totally counts, because I think when you look, so when we first got into this game and we were assigning our lanes, we were almost universally doing a 2-1-2 split or a 2-2-1, or maybe a 1-2-2, which is basically, when I say that, what I'm implying is the amount of characters in a lane going from top to bottom, right? So assuming you have three lanes, saying 2-2-1 means you have two characters in the top lane, two characters in the mid lane, one character in the bottom lane, just for simplicity's sake. And typically that tends to be the absolute divide. You can almost always expect that your specialist is going to be the one that's all by themselves in the bottom lane. But when you start to get into higher level play, that stops being a universal method of dividing your lanes. In fact, it becomes more common for you to see maybe a 3-1-1, where maybe that three roams, which I would consider roaming and rotation kind of somewhat hand in hand. They're at least very similar skills. And basically, you see group members rotate from lane to lane to support the various lanes, and you have dedicated characters, typically your warriors or your very strong specialists, that are able to be in a lane by themselves and hold their own more effectively, doing that while these more bursty characters go from lane to lane to wipe out the opposing team as they get there. Yeah. So I think all of that falls under rotation to some degree.
Yeah. And another example of rotating, too, that, you know, I thought of while you were speaking, too, is just the idea that maybe all your teammates are busy somewhere else and you're solo laning mid and there's nobody bot lane. So what you can do is clear the minion wave, rotate bottom, clear that minion wave, soak, then get back to your mid lane.
Yeah, like, and I actually was doing that as Zul this week to a lot of success. So what I did on a Towers of Doom map is I started in the bottom lane, and when I would clear the wave, and therefore I knew there was no experience to gain there, because that's why you divide the lanes, is mostly for the experience, and then secondary to that is for the push. Once I cleared the lane and I knew I had the experience for that lane, I rotated mid and helped with a team fight or a gank mid, and we actually were successful at killing people in the mid lane when I rotated up, because all of a sudden you have, you know, a 3-on-1 or a 3-on-2, and then, you know, would rotate back down to the bottom lane, clear the wave, get all the experience that I would have gotten had I stayed down there anyway, and then rotate back up. It's a nice way to get experience, but also make really aggressive moves as far as team fighting goes.
Yeah, you've actually given me an interesting idea with respect to leveraging Zul's power, which seems like he can clear a wave quick and send a stronger wave down and then immediately go rotate. Like, yeah, he might be a rotating master in that way. It's come toss a bone prison in another lane. Once that's done, get back to your lane and push it in strongly again. Like, that's interesting tactic that I hadn't thought of with Zul. I like it.
So, it makes him feel real strong, real strong.
Yeah, I wasn't playing him that. Like, that wasn't, I mean, I usually rotate regardless, but I wasn't thinking about leveraging him that way, which is like, maybe I'll pick talents that help me keep that lane pushed in and go rotate. No, that's like basically rotating is like just having it in your mind that you're not stapled to your lane until a certain magical point in the match, that a key rotation being active by swapping lanes, but also going back, like not overstaying your welcome. It's just really important to be actively, actually just, I find more and more that I play, I move around the lanes all the time, yeah, especially if you're, I think a lot of people call them like I'm roaming. Like, what that just means is they're going to be actively rotating lanes. And that's like a case where it's okay as a Nova, for example, if you're roaming, but someone needs to hearth back to the fountain, you know, you rotate to that lane to cover them while they're out of the lane. You know, don't show yourself and shoot the minions, but like, you're rotating to cover the XP soak. And when they get back, then you can get back to, you can rotate out. So there's always this sort of mini game about rotating that happens, I think. And that's an important thing to think of. I think if you're graduating from someone who knows what rotations is versus I know what laning is, I think that's when you start making those decisions on your own about when you need to leave and when you need to come back and where you need to be, you know, in any given lane. So interesting stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think mastery of this skill is a big one. We had some really successful games when we all played last. And I would say one of the things that I felt we were very strong on was our ability to move from one lane to another and have an overwhelming presence in multiple lanes at multiple times, and it just caught the enemy team off guard. And so if you want to know a skill to work on and think about that's going to push you from kind of that, if you're going up against lower skilled opponents, you are going to all of a sudden feel like you are steamrolling them, learning how to roam and rotate are going to be the two big things that are really going to help with that. And then it's going to put you on par with the higher skilled opponents who are going to be doing that anyway. And actually, we saw that in the first Heroes of the Pants tournament. The team that won, I would say, one of the biggest skills they had as a leg up on everybody in that tournament, because we were all fairly new at that point, was their ability to roam as kind of this gank squad. And nobody knew what to do with it because we were all fairly new at the game. And we were like, what's the, why? They're not in lanes. They're in places between lanes. What are they doing?
And yeah. Well, and notably, they were not falling behind in experience, because generally when you're doing too much roaming, you're missing your experience and then getting back in levels, which I think sometimes we've done in our team. Yeah. And I think we're getting better at, but that sometimes we're like, it's level 4 and we're running around smashing skulls and we're like, well, we're down 3 levels, but we're killing all these guys. And then we don't get 10 and then we lose. So
yeah, if you're going to roam, kill the minions in your lane. For two reasons. One, it's going to give you experience, and that buys you time to then go do something else. The other reason is for vision. If they see your icon all of a sudden go straight up the middle of the screen, you're not going to surprise anybody when you pop into the middle lane. They're going to know, because if they're looking at their map like they should be, they're going to see you go, whoops, I disappeared. But if you kill those minions, they lose vision in that lane until the next wave of minions comes in, and they won't necessarily think something's up until either the vision is restored and they see they can't find anybody, or you pop out mid lane and surprise someone.
Oh, so, and that's good. That's actually a good point for rotation etiquette. Actually, if you're just planning to rotate for anybody, walk back to your base, then walk out of the lane. Don't walk straight to the lane near the vision either. Like, if you're, for whatever reason, not clearing the minion wave, like, you make it look like you're telling a story to the enemy team. It's like, oh, he's going back to his base to, like, heal up or something. Like, but you're just giving them more of a hint about where you're going if you literally walk on it inside their vision, up or down. Because then they can just ping and say, hey, they're on their way. Like, you don't know what's going on in their comps. So, yeah. Get out of vision, then rotate.
Yep.
If you can.
One final tip pertaining to rotating, only somewhat. Right-click inside a bush to move inside the bush. I know a lot of people who, you know, do the thing where they hold right click to move or something like that. And they overstep the bush and you see somebody go to get into ambush position. And next thing you know, they have popped out of the bush and then they jump back in. Well, you've ruined it. They know they're able to figure that out. If you right click in the bush and then don't right click anymore, anything else, you will just move in the bush and it'll be fine and everything will be good. Also, yeah. It is okay if you are clipping into or are uncomfortably close to another character. I understand Cho'Gall looks like he smells, but you don't have to reposition just because your team's Cho'Gall is really close right next to you inside the bush. Because I've also seen people, for whatever reason, they just don't like how it looks or whatever, decide they need to reorient hiding inside a bush, and they once again also will step out. So
yeah, I fall victim to that sometimes too. I get a little ADD. I need to click around the bush and I'm like, oh man, I ruined it.
I stepped out just because I didn't like how this looked. It didn't look good. Yeah. I've done that as well, which is why I know that it's a tip worth giving. You know, be careful about bush play.
Yeah, be careful about your bush play, kid. Oh my god. All right, I think we covered the whole rotation thing, but certainly if you have questions, people should write in. I felt like maybe I had one other thing, but I can't think of it, so I'll have to post it on Twitter.
Yeah, maybe next week.
Maybe next week.
With the return of Core Concepts with an extra S.
Yeah.
Until then, let's get to your emails or calls, or in this case, tweets. So you can email us at core@heroesforyou.com. You can call us 801-471-0462. Leave us a voicemail. Or you know what? You can tweet us at Core Heroes, which is what these two people did. First tweet comes in from Boom Socks, which is what I say every time I put on socks.
You say boom?
Boom. Boom Socks.
And boom. All right.
Yeah. He says, so I'm finding Zul to be incredibly difficult to play. How about you guys over at Core Heroes? Now, we've already talked a lot about Zul in general, but I understand the feeling, and I thought maybe we should talk a little bit about the feeling of getting into a new hero and thinking, man, this is a little weird to play. And for me, that was Lunara, mostly because of how she moved. Very difficult for me to focus on learning the hero when I felt like I was struggling with just controlling the hero.
I think that's good feedback. Yeah, like it can definitely be a personal thing too. I mean, if we all felt Carl Jim, this guy sucks when he came, like, and then he slowly became our favorite. Like, we think he looked cool, but he's just not fun to play. I don't get what I'm supposed to do. I don't feel like I'm hurting anybody. I don't feel like I'm healing anybody. I feel like I'm doing nothing. And then all of a sudden he's, you know, we're like, oh my God, he's a monster. He's like the best thing ever. I personally think that Zul, I'm going through this with Zul a little bit right now. I don't find him incredibly difficult to play, but I find him underpowered. But I think I say that not because Blizzard released an underpowered character, but because I haven't found his power, if that makes sense. And each hero is its own puzzle. That's why we sort of love this game, is they release a new hero. And there's this puzzle aspect to making them work, you know, and that takes time. You have to put in the games, I think. So I think sometimes people, you know, especially those people who play one game and get immediately on Reddit and Twitter to say a character's OP or sucks based on a small sample size. I think you really have to get to the heart of a character. and then decide whether you think it's you or it's actually the design. But you have to figure the puzzle out first. And so that's where I'm at with Zool.
Understand personally. That not every hero is going to necessarily be a good fit for you.
Yeah, that's true.
Because they want to make them diverse and different, odds are there's going to be a hero that just doesn't ever play the way you want it to play. You're just going to butt heads with that hero at every possible point. For me, I haven't played him much, but I can already tell you I will have this problem. It's Chen. I love Warriors to death, but everything about the way I play Warriors is Diablo, and every way that Chen plays is not Diablo. Although his keg pushing people around does have some appeal.
That's a puzzle. Like, Chen, for the longest time, I was like, I don't like this character. And then all of a sudden, I just liked him because I figured it out. Like, it's the trouble with Chen, like, that's a great example, is knowing when to drink. Like, it's getting a sense of that when doing nothing is the right thing to do, which is exactly what you just said about, like, all your characters that you like are always, they have ADD, they have to always be hitting something. There's always someone's head to rip apart from their shoulders. And Chen's more just like, it's time to drink and rely on my teammates to do things. And I'll do something soon when the timing's right. And that's incredibly, that takes, like, a patience that's in this game. Most of the characters don't ask of you. So yeah. It's very unique in that way. He's the only one like that.
We heard it in our Heroes Charity Brawl matches, which you can find on our YouTube page right now if you want to hear this very conversation. In the Battle for the Bouillon, I play Johanna in a very specific way. Even though the build I used in that particular match is not the one I typically use, please don't take me using Falling Sword as a support for wanting to take Falling Sword. You should.
That was a genius pick, dude.
So
did you get criticized for it?
No. I realized it during the game and I said, guys, I think I can take Falling Sword. And they were like, oh, you should totally take it.
Yeah, well, that really was a genius pick because the way the game works, you can run away with your coins when you get in trouble, basically.
But I have a very distinctive way of playing her. And you can even hear at one point, I think it might be Kyle who says, wow, the other team's really afraid of your Johanna. And I don't remember who it was. Might have been Scott. Just was like, yeah, John plays a real aggressive Johanna. And sure enough, there I am chasing after the enemy team going as ham as possible. Hog. Yeah, it's all ham all the time when I'm behind the wheel of a character. So characters like Chen who need to slow down.
Well, Chen, I would say you could play Chen aggressively, but it's just like, have you ever ridden in a car with someone learning to drive?
Yeah.
And they stomp on the gas and then they stomp on the brake.
Yeah.
That's how you play Chen. You're the passenger in a car like that. That's exactly like you stop and then you go and then you stop and then you go. And then you, like, that's, yeah, I think you should still try Chen out sometime. But
all right.
I think the point was about the tweet, just that people are hard and it takes a while to figure it out.
Yeah, absolutely.
Good stuff.
Autocar plays. I don't know what that means, but it sounds pretty cool. Says, so based on episode 18 showing off a little too much master skin, did a count, base skins, only 25 out of 48 heroes have pants.
I think this, first of all, interesting field to study and all the things that are available in Heroes. Cool, kudos to you for being on the pants, the science of pants side of things. I love that. Was he referring to master skins or regular skins?
Base skins, so I'm thinking just their normal ones, because I know Murky adds pants when he goes to master skin. He's the opposite of Li Ming.
Okay,
he gains pants.
So what do you think about this? There's actually, you know, only half the people have pants in this game. Like, I know Butcher and Cho'Gall, they wear like a thong. That can't count as pants.
Yeah.
There's a lot of men wearing thongs in this game, I'll point out.
Yeah, actually, men are responsible for a lot of the lack of pants. Also, we're dealing with wild and crazy creatures. And look, if I was a wild and crazy creature, I wouldn't wear pants either. If it's like that meme that was really popular for a week, where if dogs wore pants, would they wear pants like this or this? Like, that same question could come up with Lunara. If Lunara wore pants, would she wear pants like this or this? Lunara shouldn't wear pants.
No. She's got fur. Like, you don't need pants when you have fur.
That's, yeah, it's a fact.
ants are there to keep you warm and hide your junk, and fur does the same thing, I think. So
yeah,
we're covered there.
So if you grow enough hair, you can grow hair out of pants.
What I will say is, if you really want to freak yourself out, and we've done this before, pick Nazebo, his base skin, and just take a look at what he's wearing. Specifically, what's dangling between his legs there. Just watch it for a good minute, and then you'll see sort of what happens in my brain is there's a process where I'm like, that's really weird. And did the people intend for it to look like what I think it looks like?
Yeah.
And then who's the guy who works at Blizzard who said, I'm going to make the thing dangle.
And dance.
Even when he's standing still, he's going to be moving
dance
around.
Rhythmically.
Because somebody put work into this. It just didn't randomly happen. Somebody,
it moves like
somewhere.
A cat's tail. Not like the wind blowing, like a cat's tail.
Yeah. Somebody somewhere had to think about this, create it, draw it, think about how it moves to make it lifelike. It's a brilliant piece of work, but also very... There's some subversive things in this game, and they're very subtle, but they're there.
Also, you don't want the devil wearing pants. So, there's just some characters. Diablo doesn't have to wear pants.
Although we do need a corporate Diablo at some point.
Corporate Diablo would be fantastic.
Like a stock trader Diablo.
Big spikes coming out of the suit in the back.
Yeah. And he has a briefcase.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. Calculate tape between his nose or something. Like what do the stereotypical stockholder guy have besides a briefcase and a suit?
His lightning breath, he just shoots papers at you.
yeah, that's, he shoots documents.
It's just like a printer right out of his mouth.
Yeah.
That'd be great. I am all for that. And then he can have pants at that point.
And then we need new VO for court. He's like, sell my short or whatever. Short my futures.
So, I like all of this. I like all of that. And I like all of you. That's going to do it for our show today. Bo, thank you so much for joining me on this Johnson-free episode.
Johnson-free. Yep, there's no Johnsons here.
Zero Johnsons.
It's a lot of fun. We miss Scott, though. But show must go on.
We hope he's having fun. We hope he listened to this and isn't like, oh gosh, what have I done? Well, why did I give them
we didn't ruin his vacation where he's like, I'll check out the show the Core Boys did while he's on vacation. And he's like, oh my God! He's just like, I can't enjoy my vacation. They're ruining everything.
Yep, they've ruined Frog Pants. They burned it down. Yeah. Speaking of pants, and they destroyed it. But if you want more Johnson, you can find episodes that include him at our website, heroesforyou.com. That's where you can find this episode, past episodes. You can find our YouTube page off of that, which I do want to plug again because, man, we've just got some fantastic stuff going on there. We've got talent build guides. We've got an in-depth look from you at Cho'Gall right now, which includes a replay. We've got all the Heroes charity brawl matches up there. Just more stuff coming out too. It's very exciting. So check out our YouTube page there. You can also join us in-game. Join the /FrogPants channel. You can play with us. You can play with other listeners. Basically good people, because you want to play with good people. If you want to send us an email, email us at core@heroesforyou.com. You can call us 801-471-0462, leave a message, ask us questions, tell Bo how much you appreciate his lovely hair, whatever you want to do. And make sure you follow us all on Twitter. You can follow the show at Core Heroes. You can follow me at John_Jagger. And Bo can be followed at Bo Schwartz.
Yes, that's where you can find me.
Yep. That's going to do it for us. Until next time. Go Core Hounds.
Core Hounds!
This show is part of the Frog Pants Network. Get more at frogpants.com.
We'll just do an awkward, go Core Hounds, yay.